So we'll start again with this sitting. Recognizing awareness. And receiving experience. Receiving whatever is here in this moment. Exploring the possibility of allowing what is here to simply be held in the field of awareness. Opening to what's already here. There's no need to create anything to be aware of. There's something already here, already known. At times the practice can be so simple. Can awareness simply accept what is offered in this moment? Receiving, not trying to change or fix. Resist what's here. Just accepting what is offered, receiving what is offered. This is a form of letting go. Can our heart simply be with this? It can take courage at times to open to what is offered. Sometimes we can trust the simplicity of just being aware of this. At other times, this, what is arising, what is being offered, is overwhelming. It's very difficult to simply allow it. Sometimes that difficulty can be connected with a view or an idea about what allowing or accepting means. Allowing experience, accepting it as it is, doesn't mean that we have to agree with it or disagree with it. Doesn't mean that we have to like it. This was a kind of an aha for me, that accepting what is offered didn't mean I had to approve of it. It meant I simply had to acknowledge it as being what is here. And still, at times, what is here is more potent, has more power than our capacity to be mindful in the moment. And if that is the case, it can be very skillful. We need to be honest with ourselves about whether that's the case. When what is offered swamps the mindfulness, it can be helpful to turn the attention to something simple, something that's pretty easy to connect with, maybe something neutral. Sometimes I just have a sense of letting something challenging like that just be allowed to sit in the room with me, even as I attend to something else. So not pushing it away, not rejecting it, but also not engaging. In our practice, we cultivate a very simple, steady awareness. One that just receives. Doesn't have to look for anything, fix anything. The simplicity of our awareness is what allows awareness to see very clearly what's happening in our minds. But we're not pushing ourselves into that seeing It's the job of awareness to meet experience. It's not our job to do that. Simple, aware of what And if the mind is not able to be simply aware moment to moment, choosing something simple that the mind can connect with. The Buddha really highlighted in his teachings that suffering, his whole path, his whole kind of aim was to understand, can we be free from suffering? And he explored a lot of different things, a lot of different practices, practices that simply put him into blissful states. A lot of deep concentration. And when he came out of those blissful states, he realized, yep, suffering's still here. And his own journey helped him to understand that what has to happen is that we move through. We have to understand suffering. We don't just simply kind of transcend it. But that understanding suffering is our path, is our journey. And so in order to understand suffering, we need to meet it. He uses an analogy for the path of practice. He talks about the suffering, the flood of our patterns and habits of greed, aversion, and delusion being like a flood. And he talked about the path of practice, the Eightfold Path, being like building a raft that would let us cross the flood. Ajahn Amaro, in a talk, points out that this raft, you know, a raft, when you think about what a raft is, it's pretty, you know, jury-rigged. It's like, what's here? What's around me? What can I pick up? What can I lash together with vines or maybe a bit of rope? And you know, you've got this image of, you know, various pieces of sticks kind of lashed together. It's not like a really sealed ship that's crossing. And so this is our path. This is the Eightfold Path. This image he uses is the raft. And so I reflected about this image a little bit, and one of the big kind of ahas for me in thinking about it is, yeah, the raft holds us up. It keeps us from drowning. And the image says, you know, making effort with your hands and feet, you get across the flood. So we have to do something. First of all, we've had to build the raft. We have to use the raft. And then we have to make effort. You know, but the raft gets across the flood by floating on the flood, by being on the flood. And this raft is pretty jerry-rigged, you know? It's got a lot of gaps in it. While you're lying down on it, working with your hands and feet to get across, you're gonna get wet. There's gonna be suffering. And in fact, the contact with the suffering is how we get across the flood. A different relationship to the flood than being drowned in it, swept away by it. And the relationship of contact with it, but not sucked into it. This is what the Eightfold Path provides for us, the ability to meet the suffering, but not get swept into it, drowned in it. There are quite a few questions about working with suffering, and several of them about working with very strong suffering. overwhelming suffering. One question saying, I have a strong desire for not this. I recognize that. I know that place. And the suffering being so strong that it's just, it's hard to be with, overwhelming. And the question is the idea of being someplace else, you know, the idea of being in a different conditions, changing the conditions so that this is not the conditions. Is that a fantasy, or is it wisdom kind of aiming me in a useful direction? It can be both. It can be a combination of both. Sometimes it's helpful to get out of a situation. It can be helpful to get out of a situation if there's abuse, for example. You know, the practice isn't about just, and I've talked about this, you know, it's not just about, oh, this is what's happening. At times we have to take action. And yet that action, taking that action, helpful to notice whether there is aversion in taking that action or whether that action is coming out of compassion, coming out of care and concern for oneself or another. So sometimes it may be skillful to change the situation, leave a burning house. You know, we don't just sit noticing burning, smoke. We would get up and leave the burning house. And yet sometimes when things are strong, I mean, so the analogy of a burning house is, can feel like what's happening sometimes when we're overwhelmed by suffering. But the way our minds work, it's not so simple always to just say, okay, I'm going to leave this. Sometimes the pain, the suffering it goes with us when we try to walk out the door. It's possible, you know, sometimes what happens when we try to step away from something, and this I think is partly why we sometimes move towards a repression kind of thing, because it feels like if we try to redirect our attention to something else, and I suggested in the guided meditation, if it's challenging, if it's overwhelming, turn your attention to something neutral. Sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes the thing that is so painful is like a magnet. It just, attention just gets pulled right back to it. So it's like, I don't have this choice. You know, I can't not be with this. I try to put my attention elsewhere, but then it just comes right back. And so there are some, you know, first of all, there's honoring the power. There's honoring the power of the pattern and recognizing how strong it is. And then there are some things that some tools that can help for at least small moments, for short times, to give us a little bit of a break, to let the system kind of normalize a little bit. And that might allow our mindfulness to be able to hold something that challenging. So I'll offer you two thoughts for this. The first is this one Saida suggested when he was in deep states of suffering, he would put his hands together like this and then press his thumbs together and just let his attention go into the thumb So it creates a kind of a strong sensation, a kind of a strong but relatively neutral sensation. Just let your attention go into the thumb. And then after you really feel that thumb pressure, then switch to the first finger, the index finger. Let yourself feel that pressure of the index finger. Then the middle finger, shift to the middle finger. So you don't let it stay any one place for very long. And then the next finger, the fourth finger, and then the small finger, the pinky, and then back to the thumb, rotating, creating the strong sensation and finding it with the mind, and then the next one. So you just stay with it for a little while and then shift to the next one and to the next one. So sometimes we have the capacity to be with the sensation for a few moments. But if we try to like, okay, I'm going to be with the thumb and I'm going to stay with the thumb, stay with the thumb, stay with the thumb. The habit or the pull to the pain, the suffering, it's like the power of that is going to take over. And if you're trying to just stay with one thing to stay away from the challenging experience, the mind can often just get looped right back. And so the attention needs to be shifted from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. You might be able to do that for as long as a couple of minutes, or maybe even longer. You can develop the skill of that. You can develop the skill of just keeping the attention, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. But even if you do it for 90 seconds, it gives your system a chance to really have a little bit of a rest. It kind of creates a place in the mind where it lets go of the almost like the trauma of that for just that 90 seconds, and it can give some space in the mind. Another version of this, instead of using the touch sense, uses the visual field. And this one can be pretty useful for those of us who have sight. For those of us who are sighted, you can, in whatever room you're in or whatever place you're in, some of you I see are outside. It might be a little more challenging outside, but the suggestion is to pick some particular experience, a particular visual object. And in a room, I suggest corners because they're easy to find. You can find any place two lines come together, and there's thousands of them in a room. There's a place, there's the actual corners of the room, and then there's like a corner where a piece of paper, is on a table, or there's a corner of a picture, or a corner of a vent. So any place where the two lines come together, you can let your attention land there, and just let it land there. Just let it know one corner, and then as soon as you've found a corner, find another one. And as soon as you found that one, find another one. Keep switching to another corner. And we'll do this. Let's do this together for like 30 seconds. And it's helpful to move your head while you're doing this. Look around the room to find different corners. So we'll do this in silence for a few moments. So when I do this, I experience, after about 15 seconds, there's almost always a little bit of a letting go. It's basically creating the conditions for continuity of mindfulness. It takes a little bit of effort to find a corner. So that keeps the attention away from the magnet, whatever's magnetizing the attention. So it takes a little bit of effort to do that. And then you just keep finding the next one and the next one. And so you might notice maybe the pull back to the thing that's so strong, but then you just pick the next one and the next one and the next one. It doesn't have to necessarily be a fight. Just find the next corner, the next corner, the next corner. And this can, again, allow, if you do that for 90 seconds, it can really allow the system to settle, kind of let go of an activation, at least for a few moments. And then there may be some capacity to hold what's here. I would say that with something this powerful and this strong, there can be a tendency to want to just repress it, to just put it away and just leave it, walk away from it. But what I would say is that if there's a repression in that, it will not really let you walk away from it. It will follow you. It will be embedded in your system, waiting to kind of find its way back to the surface in a way. And so finding ways to navigate, not repressing it, but also not engaging with it. These two tools that I've offered can be useful for that. So another question, I'll just maybe do one or two more about the suffering. Another question about migraines, having migraines and trying to pay attention to the pain, how it's moving and changing, but the pain intensified when I tried to explore it. So in general, with any kind of a difficult situation, any kind of whether it's a physical pain or it's a difficult emotion, if attending to it makes it worse, that's not the time to pay attention to it. Or it maybe is not an experience that should be paid attention to, that should, again, not to repress, but also not to engage with. And so with migraines, for example, also often, and I think it is possible to attend to head pain, and I have done it, I've attended to head pain with an awareness that is not constricted and that it can be fine. But at certain points in my practice, trying to direct the attention to the head was like almost like a recursion. It's like it felt like it was just a looping back or something. And some teachers that I worked with said, don't ever pay attention to pain in the head. It just doesn't work. Now, I've seen that it can, but mostly when the mindfulness gets kind of strong enough that it's already present and it's just noticing, it's not directing the attention to the pain in the head. And so if there's any experience that when you notice when you turn to it, that it exacerbates it, that's probably not a good experience to be paying attention to. And so redirect the attention, maybe create a bigger container. Another useful tool for something that's challenging that I found is rather than like with the last thing I talked about, it was like, let your attention go to something else and keep the attention going to something else. Like, don't let it go back to the thing that's so magnetic. At a more intermediate place where the thing is strong, but not so, not like pulling you into it and overwhelming you, sometimes it can be helpful to kind of consciously make the container bigger. So, noticing, and I think I mentioned this the other day, that experience, so the pain in the head, the migraine experience, for instance, is one thing among thousands that are happening in the present moment. So I did this actually with mind states as well. So at one point I was exploring depression, a mild depression, and I would see that the mindfulness was kind of being pulled to it and kind of like absorbed into it, and that it wasn't a helpful way to be with it. It wasn't actually, you know, taking me out of mindfulness, but it also didn't seem to be that helpful. It didn't make it stronger, but it didn't seem to be that helpful to kind of dive into it. And so what I did, I'd consciously like, oh, there's that experience of depression, and seeing is happening, and hearing is happening, and I'm walking and the feet are contacting the ground. So I'm noticing that. Oh, and there's the feeling of depression, and there's seeing happening. It's like the and practice. Noticing that there's a lot of other things happening, because sometimes these experiences, the painful experiences, can feel like they're they kind of like get so big. It feels like, you know, it's like that's all that's in our experience, and our mind forgets there's other things going on. And so consciously reminding ourselves that there's other things going on can be really helpful. So there's seeing, there's hearing, there's feet on the ground, there's a breath, oh, there's the depression, and there's seeing. And any time I would notice the feeling, and in this case it could be there's the pain in the head, and there's seeing happening, and there's breathing happening, and there's contact of feet with the ground, and there's the pain, and there's, so keep going with an and something else happening, broadening the container. That helps to normalize the experience, because sometimes when there's something painful or difficult happening, our mind just like, it's like the mind just like blows it up as if it's the only thing in the world. So it can be helpful to just remind ourselves that there's other things going on. So that can be useful. So like in this case of the migraines, I wouldn't try paying attention to the migraines directly. I would let the attention be broader, perhaps. You know, you could explore being with the broader sense of the body, and possibly with also the aversion, because it sounds like there might be some aversion happening too. You know, so sometimes the aversion can manifest like a bracing in the body. So you might notice that there's a kind of a tensing throughout the body that is coming with the migraines. And you may not know that it's an aversion, but you know the kind of bracing feeling. And so you might be able to soften what you can, soften that bracing. And then explore being with other experience again, not the migraine sensations directly, but just other experience. So I want to check in. Yesterday there seemed to be some interest in doing another round, but my sense is another round of the shares, but my sense is there's so many questions about working with challenge that this may be a good place to just stay with for the rest of today. And then we can do that tomorrow. We can do that again tomorrow at this time. So there, I noticed there's a couple of chats. So somebody made a comment that they found that they have headaches, and that something similar to the and practice, extending attention to the whole body and seeing the pain in the context of the body as a whole. Never directly going to the pain, but seeing the awareness in the context of other sensations, even pleasant sensations in the body. So yeah, that's like broadening the container again, letting yourself realize it's not just all in this place. There's other sensations happening in the body. So that's another version of that. So that can be useful also. And there was somebody who had their hand raised right at the beginning. I just want to, wait, hang on a second. Let me just respond to one more question. Okay, there's another chat question. Okay, somebody made a comment about staying with working with challenges is good. So another question from the, that's been submitted. I'll do a couple more of those and then open, or maybe just one more of those and then open to questions directly in the room. And I'll check in with Cindy after I respond to this question. So throughout the day, I'm aware of a great deal of anxiety and pain. The tension in my side and gut is chronic, and I'm aware that it's caused by thoughts, criticism, self-criticism, anxiety, anticipated judgments of others and impatience. All of that's aware of all of that that seems to be connected to the physical experience. I've been practicing curious about the thoughts and been attempting to allow the thoughts to be. I can keep the stories at a distance, but as I go through my day, I notice that I'm overwhelmed by sadness as I pay attention. I can allow the sadness, but then the physical pain caused by it seems to be exacerbated. So this is, again, this is an experiment, and it sounds like you're noticing. So you're noticing a lot that there's a connection. So this is a lot, you're learning a lot here, just to point this out. You're learning about the conditioning between the thoughts and the pain, the kind of tension, the holding, the constriction in the gut and in the side. And this can happen, you know, the mind that is tense will feed back into the body. It's like there's such an interface between mind and body that when the mind gets tense, the body can get tense. And so, yes, if the mind has tension in it, we can feel it. We do feel it in the body. And so you're noticing particularly thoughts connected to it. Thoughts, self-critical thoughts, anxious thoughts, thoughts anticipating judgments, and being curious about those thoughts. Another exploration is, so setting the stories at a distance, as you said, you notice the sadness. Now this is kind of dropping below the thoughts to feel, how do the thoughts affect us? And that's an important piece of like meeting the suffering, that we notice the thoughts and how the thoughts affect us. And so there's also emotions, and probably more than just sadness. There could be a big kind of mix of emotions there. There could be confusion and frustration and irritation and kind of a sense of, well, you mentioned anxiety, and that's an emotion. But the thought of anxiety is different than the feeling of anxiety. So you may be able to notice some of the feelings. And if you're noticing that then makes the physical pain stronger, you know, that might happen. You know, sometimes as we become more aware, you know, it might be that the awareness is being kind of held in a way that there's aversion to what's happening, and that's kind of tightening things even more. But sometimes what happens, and so this is something to check, and it takes trust. Sometimes what does happen is that as we open to difficulty, as we open to the anxiety and the confusion and the irritation, open to the emotions under the thoughts, it's revealing what's here. It's revealing, you know, that the physical pain is also part of the complex of the experience. And so sometimes when we turn our attention to suffering, it feels like the suffering gets stronger. So we're really getting wet as we're going across the flood. But we check, are we still afloat, or are we being pulled into that in a kind of a reactivity? Is the mind kind of hooking to that? Is it kind of getting into the whirlpool of that? If you can, if trying to be with the experience, if it does get a little bit stronger, but you're still able to be with it without excessive reactivity, it's like, yeah, I can be with this. So there was I can allow the sadness, but the physical pain seems to be exacerbated. If there's not an arising of aversion that's like, oh, I can't stand this, then it's probably okay that the physical pain is a little bit stronger. So it's a little bit of a trial and error here. of seeing. There's sometimes it feels like we kind of have to let through the awareness, through the mindfulness. It's like, you know, we see, it's so humbling. We see so much that's going on in there that we didn't know was going on in there. And it's revealed to us. And so we feel the suffering of it. That is the what happens, you know. It's we don't simply, you know, build the raft that is completely sealed from the elements so that we experience nothing of the outside elements when we're crossing the flood. It's like, that's not the way it works. But are we still connected to the raft? Is there still a capacity to be with it? Check the attitude. Really important to check the attitude in relationship to working with difficult emotions, difficult states. Is the mind able to be with it with some measure of, yeah, this is okay? Or even if we see the aversion, you know, it's like, okay, this is happening and there's aversion happening. And actually that's okay that there's aversion happening. Several of you have described this possibility of stepping into a place where you know the experience. There's an awareness of it, and it's like, yeah, this is actually okay. The mind feels okay, even as there's all this being caught in there. So there's a kind of a learning about that place and a learning to trust that mindfulness can hold and is a place of transformation. Learning is happening in that place, and the wisdom, the learning that grows there is what supports the mind to be able to have a new relationship with the experience, to even release the experience. But the whole process can be gradual. You know, the transformation process of seeing our suffering, opening to it and meeting it, and the trust and the patience that we have for the wisdom to develop, for the wisdom to support the letting go. We don't do the letting go. We create the conditions for the learning to happen, and the wisdom that grows from that learning does the letting go. So there's a lot of trust and patience that is cultivated in this. And we begin to get a taste for the kind of awareness that offers those conditions for learning to happen. And we begin to recognize when those conditions are available and when they're not. And to be honest about that, you know, it's like, yeah, the conditions aren't available right now. The mind needs to pick something else up, you know, use another strategy, another tool. And some of you early on asked about metta practice. And as I said, you know, if metta practice is a strategy for you that supports you to take a break from a difficult state, use it by all means. It's a tool that can be supportive for you to find balance again, so that the container of the awareness can be balanced so that learning can happen.